Welcome to the Untold Tales audio anthologies. Written by Don Muchow and narrated by Melissa Del Toro Schaffner. The Traveling Salesman, Part 7.
"Bob," said Glactal, in his low-key, sotto voce lizard lisp, except I didn't hear it. I was idly considering changing my interstellar business card to read Bob Clayton, Swashbuckler, or Bob Clayton, Pirate Vanquisher. I knew they were privateers, not really pirates, but that was beside the point. I briefly thought about Bob Clayton, Defender of Algar, after our successful routing of a well-armed gang of interstellar interlopers, but rejected it as I was wrenched out of my reverie by my business partner, Glactal. Glactal and I, or rather I and Glactal, since I was now the principal in the operation and the one undertaking considerably more financial risk. Okay, all the risk. Had come to Algar to set up a mining operation to harvest a huge hoard of magnetic monopoles using cheap labor from the local populace, to whom we traded technological baubles and knickknacks that weren't likely to get them into trouble. Or more importantly, us. In any case, I had constructed, in a hurry, mind you, an elaborate ruse to fool some privateers into ignoring our mining operations, which involved resurrecting some old schlock horror and B-movie science fiction flicks from Earth. I spliced them together so that it appeared that the ancient Zill, known as Cthulhu, had been awakened, and that their giant spaceship, lifted from a completely different Earth movie, had risen through the skies to attack, impervious to Galaxian weapons. That was enough to get them to leave. But I digress. Glactal was busy interrupting what was an otherwise very pleasant reverie.
"Bob,"
he shouted, "you don't need to scream."
I wasn't screaming.
"Okay, you don't need to bark or squirk or whatever you call it when you raise your voice. I heard you the first time."
"Really? What did I say?"
Let me repeat myself in case you actually weren't listening. We can't stay here. We have to load up the remaining monopoles and get off this planet." I leaned forward in the ship's dusty, ripped, but otherwise comfortable co-pilot's chair.
"Why? What's the hurry?"
"The privateers are gone," he said. "But I'm afraid there's been a bit of an insect in the lubricant." Glactal had been practicing his Earth idioms. I could tell.
What?
"Cockroach in the Vaseline?
Fly in the ointment?" I asked. "Is that what you're trying to say?
What's wrong? Tell me."
"Well," Glactal continued, "after we attached the protomatter bombs to their ship using the monopoles, which was a clever idea, I might add, but before the ship exploded, they managed to send a subspace communication. In their desperation to flee your illusionary demon,
Cthulhu," I interrupted.
"In their desperation," he continued, gritting what I suddenly noticed looked like two rows of teeth, "they broadcast the location of Algar on every known frequency, announcing that they were under attack by the Zill."
"Yeah," I said, "you're right. That was clever."
"Well," Glactal continued, "you may not be aware, but the legend of the Zill ranges far and wide in the galaxy. We might as well have just put a flag on the surface that says, 'Come and take it.'"
"Nobody ever actually comes and takes it," I said. "That's just a southern thing. That is, at least until you bought every cow in Texas. So, technically you did come and take the one thing they cared about. But I see your point. We're gonna have company. And soon." We were at least three hyperjumps away from Algar when the crowd started arriving at Algar. I was sitting in a bar with Glactal at the galactic equivalent of a Bucky's truck stop. Glactal nursed a flute of something that smelled like formaldehyde, and I downed some purple liquid of questionable provenance. We were both trying to look like we belonged there when the news broke. I felt sorry for the furry little things on Algar. Their world would never be the same. It was like Burning Man had descended on Endor. Only about a fifth of the aliens who had descended to the planet's surface were actually remotely involved in looking for Zill artifacts. The other four-fifths were selling liquor, or mating opportunities, or illicit drugs to that 20%. Or creating performance art. Or selling rides on the giant lizards they rode. Or cooking the local wildlife.
"The search is on," the announcer was saying, "for a new trove of purported Zill artifacts, rumored to be rather large, reported by a merchant vessel in the vicinity to have been discovered by master trader Bob Clay Tan."
"They didn't mention me at all," said Glactyl. "Philistines."
His mouth squinched into a kind of S shape, and he swallowed. I figured it was the equivalent of rolling his eyes. Or else he'd really had enough cheap purple liquor and was ready to switch to something harder.
"And that was you, wasn't it? You just had to exaggerate."
"What's your beef with that? Hasn't it been our modus operandi since day one?"
"Only slightly. The taller the tail, the greater the structure you have to build to support it."
He had a point. "So our mission changed. For the time being, we focused on building up that pack of lies we had fabricated to escape from the privateers. After a remarkably short time, our role in the affair had become widely known, largely as a result of my cinematic talents and misinformation that we posted on the equivalent of the galactic social media. It was more than sufficient to attract the curious. In short order, we quickly amassed a following of admirers, galactic authorities, members of the Trade Guild's board of directors, treasure hunters, genuine xenoarchaeologists, and an unhealthy following of trolls, opportunists, and other ne'er-do-wells. Somehow, regardless of which side they were on, everyone seemed to want our heads, or at least the knowledge that was in them. Of course, the wildly exaggerated stories of the privateers we had managed to scare away added to the fever for some and raised doubt among others. It didn't help that I had overstated how many Zill relics we knew to be on the planet by a factor of infinity, since there really had been none there at all. I learned only after a long conversation with Glactyl that galactic legends were that the Zill had sworn upon their return to kill every living thing in the known galaxy when they awakened. Needless to say, that escalated the shitstorm that was about to rain down upon us. To play up on that hype, we adjusted the settings on the matter replicator to artificially age the items that it produced. I didn't even know it could do that until I tried. Then, we sold the trinkets as ancient Zill artifacts. While it was a clear violation of Trade Guild rules, we would only be penalized if we were caught. What can I say? I hate being told what stuff I can and can't do. I like pushing buttons and finding out. Glactyl says he views that talent as both an asset and a liability. The froggy little bastard knows a little of everything, just not enough to stay out of trouble. Anyway, he taught me everything I knew about being a galactic master trader. Then he lost his license when a deal he brokered on my home planet of Earth had gone horribly awry, creating the actual fucking zombie apocalypse. That's how things go for him. He kind of walks out to the end of the plank with some of his ideas, then expects me to pick up the pieces, which I usually do. He'd been jailed, and had no doubt been, up to that point, rotting away in a cell somewhere while humming some cacophonous polyphonic spiritual to himself when I had exercised my influence to extricate him from his predicament. You see, somehow in the process, I had been appointed Earth's ambassador to the galactic community, since I was the only documented human to have had contact with aliens. And as representative of Earth, I had some sway. Even if our planet was considered to be the galactic equivalent of the kind of small Alabama town one sees littered with signs announcing boiled peanut with the TS on the next line. After selling a few priceless baubles to local merchants, we prepared to leave and move to another venue where we could continue business when Glactyl mused philosophically. "It's too bad we didn't find any real Zill artifacts. I wonder how long it will take them to discover there was never anything down on Algar.
But there was, I said. When I was setting up the movie projector and the pyrotechnics and whatnot, I didn't want the pirates, privateers, to be distracted by anything but our show, because they'd be able to tell it was a ruse to hide what was actually there. I scanned the area and did some quick cleanup. That's when I stumbled across some old metal boxes. They were quite heavy and impervious to the drilling beam we had used to excavate the mineshaft. I moved them to the ship to examine after our encounter with the Praxians, but I didn't open them until recently.
And you didn't tell me about them? I didn't know if they were important. In any case, they were sealed quite tightly, and I had to cut them open with an antimatter beam to find out what was inside.
But you could have destroyed the contents, shouted Glactol.
But I didn't, I replied.
You should have consulted with me first. Bob, did it ever occur to you that they might have been booby-trapped?
No, of course not.
But why?
Because, I said, at least on Earth, most people don't booby-trap their possessions, unless they've packed up and left the house. If they think they're coming back pretty quickly, they leave the door unlocked, or they leave their dessert on the table. They don't want to end up being hurt by their own cleverness.
What in the fuck's name makes you think the owners of the boxes were coming back?
I backed up a bit in my seat. Honestly, Glactol, I just assumed it in the moment. It's what I would do. I don't usually lock my doors if I have nothing to lose. Anyway, I don't think they're coming back. The boxes looked old, but majestic and technological all at the same time. I didn't think the furries made them, and I thought they were interesting, so I took what was in them. I figured we'd determine what they were later. I had been expecting some modicum of praise for my spirit of enterprise or spontaneity or something, but that evaporated when Glactol spoke.
So, you discovered a treasure trove, and only just now, after three jumps away from Algar, decided to tell me?
All I found were the three boxes, I said. Two of them were empty. But in the third one, I did find this funny-looking fellow. I reached across my lap and retrieved my day bag, into which I had stuffed the item as I was leaving Algar. The item was about 2.5 feet long and looked like a fat Nerf gun. But instead of plastic, it was constructed of an intricate filigree of a shiny, exotic-looking metal that seemed to change color with the light. In and around the filigree, the intricate design seemed to repeat itself into infinity toward the center of the device. Looking at it felt like viewing an optical illusion, and it sometimes seemed like the left side of the object continued on the right-hand side without actually looping around. Glactol took out his infamous Unitool, a multi-purpose tool that seemed to have endless functions, and scanned the odd item. Eventually, he shook his head and let out a long sigh. Then he whispered,
"You have the strangest luck, my friend. This thing is far older than anything I have ever seen. This may actually be a real Zill artifact."
"That's odd," I said.
"What's odd?" Glactol asked.
"You just called me friend."
After our conversation at the bar, Glactol decided that it might be time to become scarce again. We were in the process of becoming famous, but for the moment weren't recognizable. A short while later, we were undocking from the way station and backing out of the docking bay. We had plenty of room as our ship, and at this point I felt I was at least a part owner, was one of the smallest ones there. Glactol did the driving while I sat in the co-pilot's seat. More than once he told me to stop pushing buttons on the console. But this is just what I do. I had told Glactol more than once that it was a characteristic of my culture to explore the unknown. That was how a primitive backwater such as Earth had managed to create a space program before it had even figured out how to get rid of recycled electronics. On Earth, it was out-of-the-box thinking that got people noticed, admired, and imitated. I took the Zill artifact out of my day bag and began investigating it.
"Put that thing back," Glactol said. "It's dangerous."
"You don't even know what it does."
"Put it back."
"No."
"Put it back now."
"What if I don't?" I asked.
"So help me,"
said Glactol. If you don't put the artifact back in your bag, I'm going to turn this ship around.
Fine, I said. I'll put it back. For now.
I returned the artifact to my day bag. Glactol scowled. I tried to change the subject.
You suppose we could use the matter replicator on that thing? I asked, thinking that if one Zill artifact was valuable, several more might be more valuable, at least up to the point at which everybody's 3-year-old had one.
No, said Glactol. We have no idea what might happen. Some things can't be replicated, like live organics. Other things interfere with the replicating mechanism, or matter decomposition, or reconstruction. Or it could explode. Or it could...
Seriously? I asked. You just don't know, do you? Nobody's ever messed with one, have they? How did Galaxian civilization ever get out of the Stone Age?
By not messing with such things. On Vengar, they have a saying, you know. Obsessive inquisitiveness rewards incaution with misfortune.
We have a similar saying. Curiosity killed the cat. It's easier to say.
Glactol looked puzzled. Are you talking about the large carnivorous felines from the Paleolithic? According to my records, it was environmental change, the decline in prey population, and the ascendance of humans as the new apex predator that caused their extinction.
You know what? Forget it. I was trying to make a joke, and you ruined it.
Glactol made a sound halfway between a grunt and coughing up snot. To me, it felt like an expression of disdain. I could feel a lecture coming on.
The galaxy's most intelligent minds, he began, have worked for centuries on the few purported Zill artifacts that have ever been found. Those that weren't eventually identified as millennia-old deorbited space junk were impenetrable to modern science. A few were sold to collectors or put away where nobody could acquire them until their purpose could be determined. We conducted numerous scientific investigations, and still, no one is remotely certain what most of them can do. It is a mystery.
Only if you stop looking for clues, I replied. Maybe they didn't mess with the artifacts enough. On Earth, you get a new artifact, the first thing you do is look for the power button. Has anyone ever tried doing that?
I took the artifact out of the bag. Glactol sighed. Don't mess with it, please. I'm asking you politely. I put it back in my bag.
I didn't say anything for a whole 3 seconds, which felt like an eternity. Must be sad, I finally announced, to build this great galaxy-spanning civilization, conquer God knows who and what, and then just disappear without a trace, leaving behind only a few super-advanced items that nobody knows how to operate. Where do you suppose they all went? I can't imagine who would kill such a race. They don't seem like losers, at least from all the history you say they have. Glactol looked at me blankly.
That's actually a very good question. Where did they go?
I smiled. I was clever, but it was a rare moment that I got to actually be the smart one. From the looks of it, nowhere in this galaxy. Next one over? Someplace else? And why did they leave their stuff behind? Did they transcend their material existence?
Glactol shrugged. Nobody knows.
Well, I said, someone should find out.
The night in the bar was the last time I ever heard anyone mention searching for Zill artifacts. Once the party died down on Algar, a few hardcore prospectors remained and dug in to look for what probably wasn't there. Which is to say, I was pretty sure we had found the last one. It made sense anyway. The device I had found had been buried under a mile of rock. Everything else on the surface, according to Glactol's previous surveys, bore no sign of technological advancement beyond that of Earth's 12th century. Meanwhile, Glactol and I tried our best to stay out of trouble. We visited a few more planets, including one in particular with barely any landmass, Nearly the whole surface of it was covered in an endless shallow ocean, in which slithered countless eel-like creatures that cowered in the salt grass when approached. At one point, we had even been chased by a large angry beast who seemed overly protective of the little bastards. We took some samples of the grass and loaded a handful of eels and kept moving. Glactyl said later that eels had much more of the life force than the cattle did, and that at some point we should go back to the planet and pick up a few more, taking care to not tell anyone where we had gotten them. That made us a few galactic credits, enough to repair and upgrade the ship, including a small inventory of non-replicable dry goods and parts, since we often found ourselves in the boondocks, working a little grift here and there to pay for our next fuel stop and the occasional nice dinner. Not that I liked much of the alien food. I missed Earth cooking. One can only eat so many flarg worms before it all starts to taste the same. And so it was, planet after planet, picking up anything that looked interesting or unique, seeing what trinkets we could palm off on the natives, and moving on. Many of the civilizations we encountered were devolved and feral. Nothing remained of them but ruins and mysterious monuments and creatures afraid of the night. I felt sorry for those, as I wondered at how Earth had just narrowly escaped that fate. I kept thinking about the Zil. Perhaps after their greatness they had succumbed at last to oblivion. Perhaps they had transcended. Glactyl was right. Nobody knew. Occasionally, the locals on some worlds surprised us. A few civilizations we encountered were at the edge of discovering faster-than-light travel, and were enjoying a blossoming in a technological renaissance. Often the trade with them was productive, and we left feeling like we had scored a good deal, and let another world know that they were not alone, and that not everyone they met would be an enemy. Maybe one day we could return to visit them, develop stronger trade bonds, and form an alliance. In my idle hours, the Zil artifact called to me. Or it would be better to say it kept my fascination. Glactyl watched me constantly to make sure I wasn't touching it, which, to be honest, pissed me off more than a little. I had dragged the little twerp out of prison, spared him a life of suffering, and restored his self-confidence. For that, he rewarded me by mothering me and telling me not to touch the goods. In the meantime, I snuck little touches just to annoy him. I'd run my fingers along the filigree, feel its warmth and energy, and stare into the infinity of its innards. Nothing destructive, mind you, just stroking it and looking at it longingly. "For God's sake, Bob, what are you doing with that thing? I thought I told you not to touch it."
Nothing. Nothing at all. I was just looking at it. I wasn't touching it."
"I saw you touch it. I was watching you."
"Why are you always watching me?" I asked. "Don't you trust me?"
"No."
"That hurts."
"Okay, I trust you, Bob, but not with that. That thing is..."
"What? Above my educational level? Is that what you were going to say?"
"I'm offended.
I'm not stupid, you know."
"I was going to say it's dangerous.
But the smartest people in the galaxy can't figure out what it even does. How do they know it's dangerous?"
"I said it could be dangerous."
"No, that's not what you said. You said it was dangerous. Apologize."
Glactyl sighed. "Fine. I apologize for misquoting myself." "Don't touch it, Bob. I'm serious. Something bad could happen."
"Like what?" I asked. Mockingly, I started to poke the filigreed Nerf gun Zil thing like it was a pet. Shit, it felt like a pet. It was warm in my hands. It was even purring.
"Please, Bob, put it down."
"Or what? You gonna take it from me?"
Bob got up out of the pilot seat and moved toward me. "Oh, for weeping at high volume," he exclaimed.
"Give it to me." I got up, artifact in hand, and moved behind the co-captain's seat.
"You'll have to take it."
Glactyl followed me around the chair, past the console, and through the narrow gap between it and the starboard bulkhead, and penned me in.
"Come on, Bob.
I'm begging you, please give it to me. Stop hopping around.
Horsing, Glactyl? Geez, for a smart guy, you have an awful lot of learning to do. And I'm serious. This isn't just a disagreement. It's deeper than that. You need to respect my inquisitiveness as much as I respect your intellect. They're different and equally valuable skills.
Bob, please.
Glactyl grabbed at the artifact and managed to get a handhold on it. He yanked on the far end of it, and it started to hum. Said the artifact in a rather assertive way.
Oh, shit, I said.
Oh, shit, too, said Glactyl. Then, at the edge of my consciousness, I thought I heard him scream my name, before the world folded in around us both like an origami box.
The Traveling Salesman continues in Part 8, when Bob and Glactyl are lost in time and space.
Thank you for listening. You may notice it's becoming easier and easier to interact with us and support the show. We love our listeners, fans, and patrons. Please share this podcast with your friends and family and anybody who might be a sci-fi buff. We know they'll love it. And if you'd like to support the show for about one cup of coffee a month, you can go to the link on the bottom of the show notes in every episode and find a Support This Podcast link. We value bringing original, high-quality short stories to you every month, and we appreciate your support to keep this podcast ad-free. Thank you so much, and have a great day.